GN Newsroom, ready to join the conversation live whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
U.S. factory activity slowed amid a fall in new orders.
Based on hitting a shareholder value. As market capitalization raises, he won't
They're
get
going
any
a lot more global, so creating more programming not only for us here in the English-speaking U.S., but elsewhere as well.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:11 on this Friday afternoon. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Let's declare it. It's the afternoon. The Labor Day weekend has started. You just heard some of the voices we will hear from in the next hour or so. Tom Gimbel will be here. Orion, of course. Kelly Michelson, the doctor at Northwestern University. We're going to talk about Governor Rauner's signing of that marijuana bill, medical marijuana for opioid, to replace opioid use, and see what she thinks about that and what that might mean for the business of growing pot in Illinois. We start on Fridays usually with Andrea Haines. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Chicago Tribune, and here she is this afternoon. Andrea, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
It's shorthand is Blue Sky, right? It is Blue Sky Innovation, isn't it?
Blue Sky's fine. Okay. Blue Sky Innovation's fine. Chicago Tribune's fine. It's all good.
Sometimes when the words come out, I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, I love this story about Spot Hero. Now, this is the way I'm going to tell the story. You tell me if it's correct or not. Spot Hero losing business because when people were going to find parking spots in Lower Michigan or Lower Wacker Drive or place like that, they lost their GPS. So they tried to figure out a way to get GPS underground, and they went to Waze, right? Explain this for me.
Yeah, so Spot Hero, which gets you parking spots via your phone, and Google-owned Waze, which will tell you the quickest way to get places, have kind of teamed up with the city to put beacons on Lower Wacker Drive and those lower streets that run through there.
Because there's no GPS coverage.
Exactly. Your GPS doesn't work there, as you may know, if you've tried to navigate down there. So this will allow a GPS type of scenario to happen so you can, use your Waze. Maybe more importantly, your Uber driver can, as this starts rolling out into other places, hopefully everybody will be able to navigate down there better.
So it's good for Waze because Spot Hero is sending customers to them. Spot Hero bought the beacons themselves, right? Gave them to the city?
Exactly. And they footed the initial cost of purchasing them.
And then the city installed it. So the city's cost was just installing it. And so you would think there would be this sort of proprietary link between Spot Hero and Waze, but it's not, right? This is going to work for all of us.
Yes. So it's non-proprietary, which means others will be able to use it. And, traffic is our life right now around this area with the North Lakeshore Drive construction. I'm sure you guys have talked about. Many of you are suffering through it, as am I, basically twice a day.
We've cursed about it. We've damned it. Yes.
It's deep. Yeah. And it does, we now, in our location and probably yours, we have underground parking. And exactly what you mentioned with Spot Hero and its business literally just happened to one of my coworkers who doesn't often come into the office, came in, tried to go underground, couldn't find the right place, wound up having to cancel her parking reservation because she wound up in a different garage than she was trying to get into. So it gets a little crazy under there. And, you have people under there that don't necessarily know what they're doing. And one of the points traffic-wise is if people, A, aren't comfortable using it, or B, get down there and don't know what they're doing, they're only slowing down other traffic.
Well, and that's what the city says, right? If people are driving around sort of confused, they could lead to accidents and it doesn't work for them. So that's why the investment for the city. But it is interesting as we become more dependent on these apps, the phone apps, whether it's Traffix or, just the phone app in your car, the navigation in your car, we sort of become, the word I can never pronounce is infantilized, where we become like babies. We can't think on our own. If we don't, something we could have done 5 years ago or 10 years ago, we now can't do because there's not a machine telling us how to do it.
Yeah, we've definitely become more dependent on that, right? And also just as we prepare for things, you don't have to prepare. You don't print out a map anymore or buy a map, right? You pretty much count on being able to navigate on the fly.
If you've gone by the big red barn, you've gone too far. Come back, right? Those days of directions are long gone.
Yep.
Let's go to Microsoft now, where they are demanding that their contractors offer paid leave, not the same paid leave they offer their employees, but at least something, right? So if you are a kitchen help at a Microsoft facility, you don't work necessarily for Microsoft, you're going to get sort of Microsoft-like benefits.
Exactly. So we think of the tech talent, you know, competition, you offer these perks and benefits. But then with a lot of these companies, they contract with people who don't receive the same sort of high-profile perks.
I hadn't thought about that. Right.
Yeah, it is something people don't always think about. And sometimes you hear about it in the diversity world, that one way to increase diversity is to make sure your suppliers are coming from a diverse pool. So this is a twist on that. And this is Microsoft saying that it will only sign contracts with service providers who give their own employees 12 weeks of paid family leave.
And it's, up to $1,000 a week? Two-thirds of what you make are up to $1,000 a week?
Yeah.
Microsoft gives full pay for 12 weeks, right?
It does, to its own employees, yes.
I was interested in reading the story. 58% of companies cover some wages during maternity leaves. Only 12% do the same for paternity leaves. I guess I'm not surprised by that, but Microsoft is saying men or women, right? Dads or moms?
They are. This is a general leave, and it also, I believe, applies to adoptions because they have different leave, you know, that they will grant to actual physical birth mothers,
right?
Because they also will get some time to
you go through it.
Recover.
You get an extra 8 weeks.
Exactly.
And they've done this before, right? When it comes to time off.
They did. They've tried to lead the way on other similar things. It's their housekeeping people, their reception people. They've made a few moves to really pressure the rest of the world, you know, to do some of these things. For some perspective, Microsoft partners with 1,000 different companies across the U.S. So it's a big number.
So they're going to change people's lives with this.
They will.
And obviously some vendors are going to have a hard time covering it, which would be a difficulty for them too.
Yeah, for some smaller vendors, they say it's difficult to do that.
We've got just a minute or so left. And before you go, there are going to be hearings on Capitol Hill next week, more tech hearings. President Trump was tweeting about Google and Google searches this week. What do you make of that? I mean, what do you think is going to come out of that?
Yeah, so Trump got mad at Google this week. We know he gets mad and sometimes shoots off tweets and things that aren't fully accurate. And I think that's to some extent what happened here. There's not really evidence to back up his assertion, but he was complaining that Google suppresses right-wing viewpoints. So the Washington Post took a look at what can he really do here? Is it all, you know, threats?
Bully pulpit, which is real.
He has a bully pulpit. He can pressure Congress. He can pressure others. He always finds his way to call attention to things.
The scary thing for me is that if there is some sort of government investigation of it, and Larry Kudlow talked about that, just because he doesn't like the coverage he's getting, that's sort of a chilling thing.
Yeah, it could happen.
Andrea Haines, have a great Labor Day weekend.
You too, Steve.
I want to see you back here next Monday very refreshed.
I will try to be.
You were perfectly refreshed today. That was not a comment on that at all. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 1223. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here on 720 WGN. Well, speaking of steam, Tom Gimbel is in the studio, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back.
Speaking of something,
I've been to the Hessian Museum, brought my kids over there years ago.
It's a lot of fun.
What's your favorite festival food? Because I've gone all summer without mine.
Oh, I'm definitely not a corn dog guy.
Absolutely.
I can smell that.
I hate corn.
I'm a slice of pizza.
That's not a festival food. You can get that anywhere.
You want me to eat a giant turkey leg?
That or like the onion rings or the onion bloom, things you can't get. You got to get a slice of pizza.
Always.
Corn dog, if it's done well. And then at the end, you eat that little nub of dough off the stick.
Terrible.
That's not why we're here.
Why are you so thin?
I worry all the time. Okay, so there's this great story. You know, in Kopech, they're talking about their tweets and the baseball players cleaning up their tweets and things like that. Well, here's the story, and I don't know what to make of it, but it's about this young girl who gets an internship at NASA.
Yeah.
And then she tweets out, shut the F up, I'm going to be an intern at NASA.
Yep.
And that's where Homer Hickam gets involved.
Yep.
And Homer Hickam, of course, was the guy who wrote Hunt for or October Sky.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the name of the book or the name of the movie.
Name of the movie.
Yeah, and great guy. He's on a board overseeing NASA. He saw it and he kind of tweeted back at her and just said language, that's all.
And then she went off on him.
And she went off on him and said things that were much worse than the thing I just... And he wrote back and he said, well, I kind of oversee NASA, so maybe you shouldn't do that. And I guess she apologized, but then her friends kept it up out of ignorance with the hashtag NASA. So then NASA saw it and she lost her internship.
Yeah, she should.
She should.
Yeah.
So there's another part of the story, but tell me about why she should or what she should have done.
I think
done.
There's repercussions. I think because it's social media, now we've gotten to the point that because social media can be so crude overall, that then it's excusable. if you apologize. Whether 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, it was child cyberbullying, right? And happened, then we found out parents were doing it to kids. I'm at a point, and you know I'm old school on this stuff, but I just... You need people who have judgment. You're going to work at NASA.
It's hard to imagine ever tweeting something like that.
This is not going to work at both of our employers, LaSalle Network and WGN.
Right.
NASA, sending people into space. You know, you should have some judgment, I think.
And if you have the wherewithal to get an internship there, assuming it's not a senator's daughter, when you get a tweet back from a guy like Homer Hickam, you should look him up and figure it out.
You would think at the very least click on their face and see what their description is.
Right. And so if you are NASA, you're gone with this
girl. I would for sure make him gone. It's like any team, any company. You've got to set what the expectations are. Okay. If you take her, then what happens?
What's next? Okay, so then there's the other side of the story. Homer Hickam, who does all this tweeting, and great guy and all, he reaches out to her and says, I feel badly for you. I didn't have anything to do with it. And he really didn't. Yeah. It was the other people who tweeted out. But he called NASA to see that she doesn't have a black mark on her record. And he now thinks she deserves a job in the aerospace industry, and he's helping her.
I think that's great.
So you think it's great that NASA didn't hire her because she's not responsible, but it's okay that Hickam is helping her find a job elsewhere?
Yeah, but hey, listen.
I mean, I'm not arguing with you.
No. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that people, you make a mistake. You pay the consequence, and you go on. She didn't commit a crime. She didn't hurt anybody but herself. And now she's obviously intelligent, right?
If she got the internship in the first place.
For sure!
Unless
she's a senator's daughter.
So what you're saying is the consequence is losing that opportunity. The consequence isn't being blacklisted from the industry.
Absolutely. I mean, look at the people who run this country in all parties, right? And the mistakes they make and what they bounce back for. We have I don't know how old she is, 20, 21, 22 years old?
Probably, yeah.
She's going to be scarred for the rest of her life because of this? Delete the Twitter account and go apply for a job. No one knows who she is.
Taking this in general, I mean, do you, as an employer, someone is hiring someone or who someone's placing someone, how much do you go through someone's social media?
Yeah, I think you do. It depends on
how
the level of the person.
Years, how far back?
Oh, I don't think, not that far back. Yeah. It's more recent stuff. I mean, the stuff going on with the baseball players, and they have the homosexual slurs and stuff like
There's
that.
Some
and that's terrible.
Stuff,
that's terrible.
Right.
But I mean, you look back and you've got somebody when they were 16 years old and what they're doing and circumstances and kids. Nothing bad is, am I saying, is okay.
Right.
But there's also looking at what children do.
What do you do? I agree with you. I mean, I think you have to take it into account. You have to get an explanation. But, we still have hamburger between our ears.
There's no doubt about it.
And still, for some of us.
Yes.
What do you do if you bring someone in and you find a tweet like that? Do you ever let them, are they able to explain it away?
I fortunately haven't had that problem directly. But it really comes down to a point of judgment. So there's two issues. One is that they did it. And if it's 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and they've changed, and okay. The other issue is, as an adult, you don't have the judgment to remember that and to go. I mean, I remember the horrible things I've done when I was 15.
Right.
Right? And thank God there isn't proof. However, I think that people need to show judgment.
All right, let me ask you this then. We're talking about Twitter and the fact that the other kids sort of jumped on. Is there a measurable difference by generation? I mean, are younger people more likely to do things that is going to haunt them later than the older ones, or the older ones just do it but in a different way?
Listen, we've talked about it ad nauseum. I dropped my son off at college. I said, don't ever forget anything you send over electronic, meaning email, text, Instagram. I go, imagine that everybody sees it, including me.
Do you think he hears that?
I think he hears it. I think it's a risk versus reward as a kid, as it is as an adult. And you take the chance, but you have to live with the consequences.
I mean, when I say he, your son.
Yeah, no,
my son's just a couple years older. My daughter, not too much older than that. And yeah, it's hard to understand when you're that age that these things aren't going to go away.
Listen, we read about politicians or actors every day doing terrible texts and sexual things. And you roll the dice, you take your chances. You get caught, you suffer the consequences. You can't get away with everything.
Unless Homer Hickam is watching your Twitter feed, and then it's okay.
And maybe he'll help you.
Tom Gimbel of LaSalle Network. Well, follow him at LaSalle Network, at Tom Gimbel as well.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by. Bye.
Always good to see you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. It is a Labor Day Friday afternoon. Welcome to the Allstate Skyline Studio. On a phone line now is Dr. Kelly Michelson. She's the director of Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities, also a critical care physician at Lurie Children's Hospital. Dr. Michelson, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. It's great to talk with you today.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You know, the governor earlier this week signed a bill to expand the medical marijuana experiment in Chicago, which is a big deal because Governor Rauner, by and large, has not been, I don't want to say he's not been a big supporter of the program, but he's not been big when it comes to expanding it. And he certainly did this week. And it has to do with opioid deaths. Almost 2,000 people died of opioid deaths in Illinois in 2016, 72,000 around the country. And the governor is going to allow medical marijuana to be used in replace of what? In Percocet, Vicodin, Oxycontin, and things like that. What do you make of the governor's move?
I think it is an interesting approach to thinking about the opioid epidemic. The idea, presumably, is that a significant component of the opioid epidemic reflects people who develop problems with opioid addiction after receiving prescriptions from their physician for any number of things that might require opiates. And the idea, presumably, is that if you can use an alternative to opiates to help manage those patients' symptoms, perhaps you can minimize some of the addiction and some of the problem that we're seeing.
Is that a good assumption? I mean, how big of a problem does come from prescriptions from doctors?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that we're just really now learning more about how this epidemic has developed. And there are some data that show that some people develop addiction problems after receiving prescriptions, but some data show that there's really not a lot of people. In fact, there was a recent study that was published looking at people who hadn't been using opiates and had some kind of procedure and were prescribed opiates, and it turned out that less than 1% of the people who had prescriptions developed problems. So it's a little bit unclear if that's going to make a big difference in the opioid crisis or where all of this is coming from. And I think the thing for me that's so important about all this and raising awareness is the need for us to know more about it. We really need more research on who's developing problems, why they're developing problems, and what is their pathway to that issue.
Okay, so even if it isn't going to alleviate or greatly alleviate the opioid crisis when it comes to addiction, could you make the argument that it's still, medical marijuana is still overall a safer and perhaps, and maybe not more effective, but at least a safer and effective replacement for these drugs, or do we not even know that yet?
Well, I think those are two different questions.
Okay.
In terms of the safety issues, death from marijuana alone is highly unlikely. We've seen it happen probably in kids, so their children are more susceptible to that kind of extreme problem. But so in that respect, perhaps maybe medical marijuana is safer. The question about efficacy, though, I think is an unanswered question, and that's, in my opinion, where we need really a lot more work. There's some good data that shows that medical marijuana helps improve nausea in patients who are receiving chemotherapy. It helps adults with chronic pain, and it helps adults with multiple sclerosis and some of the spasticity issues. There's emerging data about its use for seizures, but I don't think we have great data about whether or not marijuana is better than an opiate for, say, an orthopedic procedure, like if you broke your bone and you had to have a surgery that way. So that, I think there's a lot of questions about efficacy that remain, and Marijuana may be safer in some ways than opiates, but there's huge problems with marijuana too. You can have marijuana abuse. That's a problem. There's all kinds of issues related to marijuana use in pregnancy and its impact on the unborn child or young children. So. There's just a lot of unanswered questions.
So those of us who know nothing about it but have strong opinions think, well, this is obviously the doctors were overprescribing this whole thing, these opioids. They're giving them out like candy. You seem to be making the case that that's not necessarily true.
I would like to say that I don't think we entirely know. When you look at the NIH website, when you look at a lot of reputable websites, there is definitely this contention that a lot of prescribing patterns have led to this issue, and I'm not necessarily refuting that. But what I am trying to bring awareness to is the fact that if we pivot how we do things, we need to really think carefully about what we're pivoting to and if we're pivoting to the right thing. We don't know a lot about medical marijuana yet, and we need to learn more.
If we do pivot, it's going to be a big pivot, it seems like, right? There were 42,000 patients are approved now in the medical marijuana program in Illinois. Last year, about 2.3 million patients received opioid painkiller prescriptions. So it has the ability to dramatically expand the medical marijuana experiment in this state.
Yeah, potentially it could. I think that's to be seen.
Okay, so I'd like to get yes or no questions, and you've only complicated it more, I'm afraid, Dr. Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, on balance, if you were the governor, would you have signed this bill or not signed this bill?
That is definitely a yes or no question. I think there's a reason I'm not in politics, but I have to say that I like the idea of making medical marijuana more available, but I'd like to see that happen in conjunction with really good research about whether or not it's really effective and why it's really effective.
Maybe you have to have patients using it to get the research. Is that an argument?
Well, I think that that's part of it. And we certainly won't be able to find the answers to the questions that we need if we're not trying to test it. So I do see, in some ways, this a step in that direction.
Dr. Kelly Michelson, the director of Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities. Great to talk to you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So we've been chatting all about buyouts, developments, and big news all around the city, but one of the most important projects is a new wind farm near Bloomington Normal. And who's helping fund that project? One of the giants of the business world, Salesforce. This wind farm will be one of a handful of projects around the Illinois area, but this particular farm will generate enough power to run 71,000 homes in the area. Even more proof that Chicago is the spot to invest in. Even the West Coast companies are throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at us. I feel good about this. And it looks like the board that runs Maywood-based Loyola Medicine feels good about their recent decision to name a new CEO, Sean Vincent. It's during a time of change for them, as they also recently finalized the buyout of an area hospital for $270 million. Vincent is on the younger side at 49 and has some big shoes to fill, but with his for-profit and non-profit healthcare experience, it might mean that he's going to be around here for a while. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The number of the week now is 14.5, as in 14.5%, and we get this from 538. Thanks to strikeouts and home runs, the number of batted balls put in play in Major League Baseball was down 14.5% last season when compared to 1980. Now, 538 extrapolates from that defense and defensive positions are starting to mean less and less in baseball, and that means when it comes to writing paychecks, the hitters, rather than the fielders, will cash in. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about that music in just a sec. I mentioned just a couple of times last week about the fact that I was going to lead a trip to Switzerland with WGN listeners. We do a couple of trips every year. And, I got to tell you, thanks to all of you, it sold out in about a week. And about a week, we filled up the trip to Switzerland. So thanks very much for tuning in for that. The other thing I want to say is that about 75% of it are people who've traveled with me before, which speaks to the fact that just how much fun we have and how great these trips are. So the trip to Switzerland is filled. It's off the table. We are working on a trip to Italy, which will probably be next June as well. Looks like Northern Italy, and WGN's Dave Ennett is going to lead that. So if you're interested in that, send me an email, steve@stevebertrandtravel.com. And we'll put you on the list, and you can be among the first to sign up for that. All right, on the phone line is Front Row Phyllis. Front Row Phyllis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
All right, you heard the B-52s there, didn't you? Did you hear that bump with the B-52s?
I heard that and the fact that I'm not going to Switzerland. What's going on with that?
I could squeeze you in. Actually, I couldn't squeeze you in. We are jam full. In fact, I'm already turning people away. We're going to have more Gruyere cheese than you can imagine, every different way.
Exactly.
Well, you're here to tell me what's going on this weekend, and I kind of fumbled. I had some friends who invited us to Ravinia tonight, and I forgot.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we're going to be able to make it, but it looks like a fun show at Ravinia. Boy George and the B-52s.
Yeah. So it's tonight and tomorrow night. Of course, the Grammy winning legends, Boy George, and then the multi platinum B-52s are going to be hitting the stage. Coming back from the 80s, and I can assure you that they are going to be completely decked out.
You make it sound like they're coming back from Des Moines. They're coming back from the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. They're not coming back from Des Moines, the 80s.
Okay.
So what's really cool is that Boy George actually has a new album coming out at the end of October, and it's the first in 20 years.
Really? That's funny because I actually met him. I don't think it's been, maybe it's been 20 years ago, but he was coming through. He had a show at the Park West, and it was a solo show. So, wow, I wonder if it's been 20 years.
Time flies.
So that's a big one. It's going to be pretty crowded up in Highland Park this weekend, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Who's the headliner there for you, the B-52s or Culture Club?
You know what? I love Boy George. I do. Yeah. I like B-52s, but I really am a huge Boy George fan. So, yeah, pretty excited about that. But a big show tomorrow night, too, which is, over at Wrigley, the house is going to be rocking, especially for all the country fans.
Yes.
They know what I'm talking about, right? Luke Bryan, along with Sam Hunt and John Party and the beautiful Carly Pierce, and they are here on What Makes You Country. And what I have heard is it's more like What Makes You Vegas, because the show is everything from lasers to rotating stage parts to fireworks going on. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Big bling for Luke Bryan at Wrigley Field. Also, it used to be, and maybe I'm just not in that circle, but Jazz Fest used to be a huge deal in the city, and I just haven't heard much about it this year.
Yeah, it still is a huge. It's actually the 40th anniversary. So, which is kind of wild. And this year's performances include Ramsey Lewis, Kurt Elling, Diana Reeves, and Orbert Davis and the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic, plus plenty others. And it's going to be running. It's running today through Sunday. So you definitely want to check it out.
And that's in Grant Park this weekend. A couple of suburban festivals, one in Naperville, another one in Schaumburg.
Yeah, so the Naperville is phenomenal. It's the Naperville Last Fling. It starts today, runs through Monday, and I have to tell you, so Lance Bass is going to be there tomorrow evening from NSYNC, and he's going to be hosting along with several other artists. And then Saturday night, Cheap Trick is going to be performing.
Oh, wow, nice.
On Sunday night. Yeah, okay. So that's pretty fun. And then the Schaumburg Festival is phenomenal as well. It's got arts and crafts, a carnival, and three stages. Maddie and Tade, the country artists, are going to be performing on Saturday night. So it's really a very, very fun-filled weekend.
Lots of information there. You can find more at frontrowphyllis.com, right?
Yep, you got it.
All right, have a great weekend, Phyllis.
You too.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.